This week on Potlatch, Dave Porter and Victor Matander, Indians of the Yukon Territory, speak on land claims and the gas pipeline. Mo Wassily attended gas pipeline hearings in Tok in April. While there, he interviewed two natives of the Yukon Territory, Victor Matander and Dave Porter. Porter is the Southern Regional Pipeline Coordinator for the Yukon Indians. He told Wassily that even though the gas pipeline has not yet been built, it has already affected the Yukon Territory and the northern British Columbia areas.
Just on speculation, there will be a gas pipeline. There's been a lot of economic activity in the Yukon. Business, new businesses from the southern part of Canada are relocating in the Yukon. Commercial real estate is just skyrocketing. Like the people that had real estate, prime real estate, are making bucks. They're retiring right now. You know, it's taken off. You know, the whole Alaska situation all over is happening in the Yukon right now. You know, half the boom is the laying of the infrastructure. It's not the actual construction. Is you know, like the building of the warehouses, setting up the service industry, all that stuff is happening. It's starting to happen right now. Pipeline impact is happening. Rents are starting to go up. Those kinds of things are happening. Prices of goods are going to eventually. They've always been high in the Yukon, but with this, we feel like they're going to get higher. And the Indian people, in no way in the Yukon, have a solid enough economic base to participate. You know, like until the land claims question is settled, the native people have no real tools to seek any benefits from what is happening. You know, like it's the whole thing all over again. You know, development is proceeding at this present time without our consent and without our consultation and without our involvement. At this present time, the community is totally decimated by alcoholism. Right? If they built the pipeline, in addition, they should also build gas ovens, you know, to throw the people in there and turn the gas on. Yeah, people are dying right now from the impacts that are happening in the Yukon right now. There's no way that those people are going to survive. A lot of them are never going to make it through. People basically don't want the pipeline, but they have a good sense of realism that there are greater forces at play in this than 6,000 Indian people in the Yukon. I mean, we're talking about multinational companies that control the major financing in the world, you know, and to a large extent dictate to governments what they will do and will not do. But we're saying that, okay, we realize that that situation very well does exist, but we will become a cog in the wheel if you do not settle an outstanding issue with us. You know, all comes back to land claims. If the claims aren't settled from our point of view in a just way, then we'll do everything possibly within our power to amend or undo that situation.
Pillow.
The Yukon Indians have set up a pipeline office only since February 1st. Porter says that since that time...
What we're doing is amassing information, as much as information as possible. The biggest reason why we were here in Tok. That information, once that we have it together, and provided that we have the finances to stay alive, we're aiming to become full participants in the whole pipeline question. And this covers the whole thing. This covers the involvement of terms and conditions that will be attached to the pipeline company prior to their granting of right-of-way. This involves employment, training. This involves also contracts, the whole gamut of what is involved in pipeline construction. We would like to be able to participate and benefit fully as possible where there are benefits and where there are going to be impacts. We would like to be prepared so that we can design programs at the community level to help ease those impacts.
Porter's companion, Victor Matander, commented on the relationships of subsistence, economics, and pipeline impact in the Yukon Territory.
This area of subsistence is quite important to us, and you know, the whole land claims question, it's being brought up there, and we talk about the total control of that area of renewable resources, you know, which includes trapping, hunting, and fishing, and timber resources, and the water, which is, a main resource to us in the Yukon, and we feel that the claims package has to be, first of all, negotiated and settled before any pipeline comes into the Yukon, because without that, we don't have the necessary tools to protect our interests. You know, if the pipeline is going to come, it has to come on those conditions that land claims be settled and implemented first. And out of that, there would be certain terms and conditions that would be there to protect the Indian people. Economics of that pipeline project is quite high, and in Alaska, I understand that out of the $10 billion, the Native people got about $750 million for the contracts. And, you know, that's one area that can be utilized by the people in Yukon. You know, there's the clearing of the right-of-way, which involves labor and certain equipment. And there's no reason in the world why we can't compete with those areas and get those contracts. Same as building of access roads. You know, as Alaska Highway is being built, a lot of Indian people were heavy equipment operators that worked on that Alaska Highway project. 9 months, I believe, when it took to complete that highway. So we have all that expertise behind us, and you know, looking at this pipeline project, we want to make certain that the benefits come our way, and we can't really, we're not in a position to receive those benefits until we have our claim settlement, you know, which is, you know, the claim involves a lot of land, it involves control, it involves constitutional developments, you know, which in the Yukon, people are talking about a province should be created in the Yukon. Well, what we're saying is that, you know, we want some of the control. We've lived here for time immemorial, and because of that, we have to make certain that our interests are protected, and one area is that control. In the running of the Yukon, in the resource sharing, in the control of our lands, and how that should be directed to the interest of the people. And, you know, those areas have to be clearly spelled out before a pipeline comes, because of the immigration of people that would come to Yukon, you know, big bucks and high wages, and people are after that.
If we can make one blanket statement to put the whole thing in perspective, it would be that everything that is happening in the Yukon and everything that will happen in the Yukon is contingent on our land claims.
Tander explains how the Yukon Indians want a land claim settlement of their own. Such a settlement would account both for the differences in the special needs of Canadian natives and the different setup of their government.
One thing that we made clear to the federal government is that we don't want to base our claims on precedents, you know, what happened in James Bay or what happened in Alaska, but rather, you know, meeting the needs of what we talk about, you know, which, you know, involves such a broad perspective.
I think our claims will be similar to the Alaskan claims in such that there will be a land transfer of title, and there will also be the transfer of bucks for compensation. And in addition, there will also be some sort of structure, corporate structure, if you want to call it that, that will have to be set up to accommodate all the monies and lands. Right now, we're thinking more or less along the lines of having one central. If we're going to have to go the corporate route, in a sense, we're going to have one central corporation for the totality of all Yukon Indian people. Hey? And our claim differs very much from the Alaska claim, is that your claim in Alaska was legislated. Okay? And ours is a process of negotiations right now with the federal government of Canada. And in those negotiations, we cover the total perspective of our life. We're saying that the claims will enable us to actively participate in what is Yukon today and what will be Yukon in the future in all aspects of the governing of that country. And you look at the political institutions, as Vic mentioned, the constitutional development of the Yukon will be contained. Game laws, the control and management of game, you know, like, we're going to lay all that out. The whole residency thing, like in Alaska, that's a big problem right now. You got a 30-day residency clause. Eh? And in the Yukon, it's a little better. It's a year. But in terms of our perspective, that isn't enough to guarantee us protection. Eh? Where the people in the communities are talking along the lines of 5 to 10 years of residency in the Yukon for people to be able to exercise their democratic franchise of being able to vote. And for hunting and fishing and trapping, you know, you're looking at 3 to 5 years along this. Those are the positions that the communities are putting forward, and those are going to be among them. So it's, you know, like for another different area, subsistence living, we'd like to put it in the way as such, the way that a native person, an Indian person in the Yukon, can participate in whatever is happening in the Yukon. He can participate in the industrial wage economy. And at the same time, he should also have the guarantee and protection that if he wants to pursue a subsistence lifestyle, he can do that.
See, that's something that really has to be clearly spelled out, and it has to be a guaranteed base for that renewable industry. And, you know, like the areas of hunting and fishing, which, like fishing in the Yukon, commercial fishing of salmon has depleted over the years because of the huge amount of fishing by the Russians and Japanese and
Alaskans.
And Alaskans, you know, but there's in our streams there's no fish left, you know, and you know, we're really concerned about those areas, and we feel that you know, we need a program where that supply could be brought back to where it was before.
You know, yeah, I remember we're looking at hatchery-type programs to enable us to build up stock like that. Mm-hmm. And I think even further to that, an accommodation of that, we'd be looking at probably to negotiate some sort of agreement on the commercial fishing with the state of Alaska.
Comments on the progress of land claim settlement in Canada so far.
Our claims have been in process of negotiations in 73. In 78, nothing has happened really, basically. There's been some agreement on philosophical areas, such as that we agree that the claim should consist of 14 basic elements to cover land, money, cultural development, retention of culture, education, those kinds of things have been done. But the federal government, as anywhere else in the world, I guess, when you're dealing with the supreme government, they only move when they want something. Okay? Now they want a pipeline. This is the same situation in Alaska, in that the Native people had been pressing for claims for 100 years or so, to my understanding. And it was only when the oil industry found all the oil in Prudhoe Bay and the gas and said, okay, we want to build a pipeline to take this out, you know, and make some dollars. And the government saw that there's going to be revenue from that for them. So they said, okay, we'll accommodate you people. We'll give you a land claim settlement. And the oil industry supported, lobbied on behalf of the Native people of Alaska. That's what's happening in Canada right now. You know, like the gas is coming from Alaska for American consumers, but it's going to cross Canadian land, right? And it's going to generate some monies for both the federal government of Canada, the provincial governments of Canada, and also the territorial governments of Canada. And so they are very interested now in our land claims. And as such that if possible, they don't deal with us in a just and equitable way, that our land claims could result in that there will be no pipeline.
See, the pipeline that's being proposed throughout North America, along, you know, like along Alaska and Yukon and BC and Alberta and down into the lower 48, that to us is just the, as soon as that pipeline comes, it's the opening of the door of the developments that are going to come. Because we understand there's going to be another pipeline being proposed, and there's going to be this talk about of a railroad being pushed down to the south. You know, those things are going to happen. There's going to be hydro development projects that are being proposed. The Shackwack project, which entails the construction and paving of the Haines Highway, you know,
the Alaska Highway from
Alaska Highway from Beaver Creek to the Alaskan border here. You know, those things are of major concern to us, and we feel that before those kind of things come, we have to have a claim settlement in order to participate in the benefits that would come from, say, those projects or developments.
Why
Alaska Claims Settlement Act, certain Native rights were bargained away. Victor Matander thinks natives of Alaska made a mistake in such an agreement and hopes the Canadian natives will avoid such a settlement.
We don't want the federal government to come and say, well, we want those rights extinguished. We're saying that we want those rights, Aboriginal rights, title or whatever, entrenched into the whole, into the land. You know, it's got to be there, and because, you know, we've always lived here all the time, you know, and there's no reason why that Aboriginal right has to be extinguished. Like in the James Bay settlement, that's what they did. They don't even have the rights to the land anymore. You know, that was all taken away. In the Alaska situation, the same thing. And, you know, we don't want that to happen.
Oh.
Wassily asked when Canadian land claims will be settled. Porter commented,
"Depends how serious government gets. If they give us negotiations direct with a committee of cabinet, 1980 is a realistic date for settlement of claims. Yeah. I mean, that's just working out the negotiations and signing the document. That doesn't entail implementation of what is settled. You know, and that's something else that we're very concerned about, and it's something that we're going to pursue, is that we build in the mechanism of implementation very, very straightforward and very much to our interest, because that's the biggest problem now that's facing the Alaskan people, is that a lot of ambiguous areas are in the Settlement Act. And now, like Cook Inlet tells us, they had to fight the government 16 times in court, spend $4 million, won 15 out of 16, you know, that type of thing. Transfer of lands, a very minuscule part of it, and then 1991, taxations coming onto those lands. Yeah. We want to avoid those kinds of problems. And that's why, you know, like to a large extent, what was said earlier in terms of this forum here, is that there has to be a greater communication between the Yukon people and the Alaska people. Like, is that you people have experienced very much the same things that we are going through right now, and we'd very much like to learn from you people.
I think Indian people as a whole, you know, the interest in North America is there. I think, you know, because I don't think Indian people recognize the boundary between Canada and Yukon. I mean, Canada and the United States. And, you know, something of this nature that's happening now, we could certainly use any amount of assistance that the Alaskan Native people could provide to us. You know, saying, well, here's what you do and here's what you don't do.
Who knows? Maybe in the future there'll be some sort of a system where there's a nation of indigenous people within the whole of the North Americas once again. You know, maybe we'll have trading relationships between different nations of indigenous people, Aboriginal peoples. You know, like set up our own trade tariffs. You know. Set up our own railroads, our own pipelines, to fit our needs.
Dave Porter of the Yukon Indians, thanks to Folkways Records for the music from the Pacific Northwest Nootka Tribe and from Barrow and the Northwest Territories in Canada. I'm Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening.
Potlatch came to you from KUAC in Fairbanks. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting gave some of the money to produce this program.
From the University of Alaska, this has been a KUAC production.